best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Alright, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza.
Maybe you should quit acting like a bitch.
Big O! Showtime!
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing, Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a lick it bad. For the show, let's go direct to DLFGS.org. And I see challenges at LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 902 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Joel.
Good evening.
And we have Joe.
Yes, I am here.
And we are, we're casting from the Mintcast mumble server tonight because the,
Delwyn failed us.
This was the Mintcast mumble server, 2 years,
two years ago.
Yeah, a little more than 2 years ago, and it's due to be deleted, but it's the HPR server, so thank you, HPR.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be wild if tonight was the night they decided to delete it?
That would be hilarious.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
We'd just be hanging out in the lounge.
5 minutes.
Yeah.
Or the HPR room.
Right. Well, they're just deleting channels. They're not deleting everything, are they?
Yeah, they're not deleting the whole server. Looks like the HPR room is staying and the lounge is staying, but nobody else seems to record here anymore. I guess you have to talk to Ken if you want to record your podcast here, and maybe he'll make you another room.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully we figure out what happened to our chatter.skyhaven.net. I think one of the things we probably should do is start looking at maybe an alternative, not an alternative to Mumble, but an alternative server, so this doesn't happen again, but that's me.
Does anybody want to spend $5 a month on setting up a DigitalOcean server?
I could. Maybe.
Well, otherwise, I can talk to the Mintcast guys and see if they're willing to
let us use the space on their
server.
We'd never be the same night, that's for sure.
Right, right. We record on Sundays there, so good to go.
I'm sure Delwyn's going to have it back, but it's always good to have a backup.
Right. As we, I'm sitting here, I'm designing a little 3D printing story. Is I got this lamp that I got at Target. That I use on my desk, and it's just a very cheap lamp. It's like the base is made out of like Luxan or something, like, well, probably plexiglass of some sort. It's kind of shaped into a square with like a metal piece on the top of that. Well, it cracked a while ago, and I decided, well, why don't I go ahead, print a new base for it? That way it's more solid. So that's what I'm doing, and I'm custom designing it, but I'm sitting there custom designing that, and Joe's like, what's going on? And I'm like, I don't know. Haven't tried yet.
Well, you're the easiest person for me to contact since you're normally on Facebook.
Way too much.
And Dan has a Facebook, but he can never check.
Never logs in. Dan's daughter keeps getting kicked off of Facebook.
She shouldn't be posting those kind of memes.
Which one gets kicked off the space?
Page. Page. I think it's from some of her more artsy stuff that she posts.
I am. You know what? You got me. I don't know.
Dan's like, Facebook? What's that? Fascist book.
Oh, I got a message back from Rich. He said he's just relaxing after a workout.
Yeah.
So Rich started lifting the weights, I guess.
12 ounces at a time.
Well, I'm probably going to be lifting weights once Joel starts going off and talking. Into the weeds.
Ha ha ha.
What?
Anyway.
What was that about your 3D printer?
No, I'm just, I want a 3D print, layup base, and that's about it. Oh, that, and I think tomorrow I'm gonna go ahead and order, a replacement board. I think I'm gonna get a, Big Tree, SKR, Mini 1.3, I think. I think that's the one that will work with it. I have a friend, he has about, probably 10 to 20 3D printers, and I'm not joking. So, and he's modified both Creality and Enders with no problem. So, I want to go with that board and see if I can make it work. It's not that expensive. It's like $40 or $50, but then I have to... The biggest pain in the ass is going to be tearing it apart, because the way they... way Creality built this thing... The board is all the way kind of at the top of the outboard case, and that's above the power supply. So I have to remove the power supply completely before I can get to the board and start pulling cables and, pulling the board out. But at least I should be able to pre-program the board before I, put it in the case, back in the case. So. And this would also upgrade me to, from the default, which I believe is the 8-bit board, to a 32-bit board as well. So, with silent drivers. So, my printer should be a lot more quieter, I hope. We'll find out. But, and the main reason I'm even doing that is I'm not gonna rush to do it. I may even wait until after we move to do it. But, I just, you know, right now it's just been so crazy with work. We lost another teammate, and now they're gonna sort things out a little bit more. So in our pager duty, instead of being right now, since we're down to two seniors, if we stuck to the way we used to do it, we had a first tier and they would get paged. When they're paged once. 5 minutes later, if they don't respond, they get paged again. And then after 5 minutes, they page the second level, which would be me or Cindy, who's the other senior admin. So long story short, they're going to remove the second tier entirely. It'll page the first on duty person twice. Then it'll page three of us. It'll page all three of us. So, I don't necessarily have to pick up every one of those calls, but somebody does. Because if it doesn't, then they'll page our manager. So, and the other changes they're going to be making to our team is I want to be doing a lot less of the grunt work. So, like, clones and simple stuff are things I won't do. And that'll be done by the other four admins once we pick up the other one. So... I think we will probably within the next week we'll have the other one start. Okay, she won't be thrown in the rotation right away, but she'll start grabbing work pretty quickly.
You don't have your clones scripted?
Well, there's a long story about that. We're working on that. part of the problem is the wizard that we use is a Java application, and it's not a command line Java application, and they don't have a command line version of it. So it makes it a little hard to, automate it. Alright. So we have to manually do the delete. We can, automate the backups, and we're actually getting much better on that. So that way the day shift can just grab the backup and, you know, and, move it over once they clean up the old environment. And do their clone. But, make a long story short on that is we're working on it. our SaaS team, we have a SaaS version of our product. And I think they're going to try and modify that code so it'll work with SQL and, Unidata, Because right now it's set up to work with Postgres, because we're going, the SAS products go to I believe they're going to Aurora DB with Postgres databases. So they had to make modifications to the command line version so that we can use it for SQL and Unidata. So once that happens, then we'll definitely be able to get an automation on that. And that's kind of other things too. Like, one thing I worked on today is a client had like 4 or 5 URLs in, their self-service application that they wanted to change. All right. But the problem is the admin site part of each of the application, if you're load balanced, you're going to randomly get one server or the other based on the load balance. Okay. So we are in this case. So I had to kind of play some, depth maneuvering, and we downed one site, while we made changes to the other site, brought the old site back up, waited a minute or two, downed the site that we just changed, and then changed the other site, and then, brought both sites back up, and then we were able to get that done. But I wrote an idea in for our R&D and says, hey, you should be able to change this no matter which freaking server is on, and the changes should replicate to every server that's listed in the load balance. Dinkus. Anyway. So and I've been pushing that around. Both my department and our CAMs have been sharing that with our clients too. So fortunately, we're seeing the idea in our system is basically a way either a client or we can share information to make the product better that would eventually make it to R&D. And it's kind of a vote-based system, so the more votes you get, the more attention it'll get. And then eventually they'll hopefully address the change. So, or convert the idea into a change. So someday I hope they'll do that, because it's really a pain in the butt for us managed clouds folks, because the clients want to be able to modify that on their own. Not only that, but they also want to do things like when you change something within Colleague that requires, application pools to be recycled and before they show up, the client would love to be able to do that whenever they want to. So, because a bounce like that doesn't take that long, you know, but if they need a bounce right now, they submit a case, we pick up a case, we spin an e-change, and we do it, you know. But it's a pain in the ass. But so hopefully my job will kind of change a little bit. I will be doing less of the grunt work, more of the long project work. We got a lot of stuff happening with the migrations coming up, and start to pick up more things like Jenkins. I'm technically, I think as of May 1st, I'll be technically on the engineering team. Still the same team really, but yeah, you know, and still able to do a lot of the same things that I do now. It's just, I want to be doing less of, oh, Joel, upgrade so-and-so to version 2.31. Well, Joel's not doing that shit no more. Because that's simple work that our juniors should be able to get. So, and eventually, maybe by the end of the year, Bangalore's going to be 24/7. And we're going to be concentrating more on the engineering side of things than we are the common everyday maintenance. So the automation of things, stuff like that.
The support stuff you're going to hand off to Bangalore.
Yes. So the paging, all the paging stuff will go to them. And we won't be paged. Unless the shit really hits the fan, then we will be paged. But you know, that's just the way it always is.
That's the way L3 support works.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time you're developing or coming up with new stuff or setting up new stuff, and then sometimes you get called to fix things that break.
And I really need to buckle down and start studying from an AWS cloud practitioner
See, I got like four sets in while you were talking.
Mm-hmm. But I gotta take that test. I gotta get my AWS certifications. Oh, and the other things I would be doing would be training people, which is kind of something I already do, just because I take pity on the lesser admins.
Well, training people is good. That means that hopefully, you know, they'll retain some of it and do things the way you want them done.
Yes. Well, and that's kind of exactly the point, yeah. I mean, we need to... When I kind of had a little speech after we had that little meeting today, and I said, you know, I don't mind teaching. In fact, I actually really like it because I want you guys to be as good as I am, or better at some point in time. So it's like, I don't want to be the only one to know everything.
Yeah. Because then I can never take a vacation.
Ex-freaking-zactly.
I don't want to be the only approver on this, because then you're going to call me.
Mm-hmm. Now, the only kind of downside is with the change in the PagerDuty stuff is I got to keep my phone, my work phone with me up until 8:30 or 7:30, depending on what time of the year it is. Because I could be paged, and I need to be able to respond to those, especially if no one else does.
Yep.
Luckily, though, it doesn't really happen very often. Even when I was on Tier 2 support, where we would do that, I don't get a lot of pages. But then the things that I get... And I'll probably continue to get our needle in a haystack bullshit. You know, like I got two or three clients all of a sudden today. I don't know why. They're all on different instances. You know, they're all different institutions, but they all three had some sort of performance issues today. And I don't know why. They're all going to be different. One of the first ones, I think we figured it out, was somebody was running something large that was hitting the database server pretty hard, and the only problem is there wasn't enough memory to support SQL, so it started jamming the CPU level up. So right now, I think they're in the process of scheduling a downtime where they're going to... They're actually gonna
increase the virtual memory the actual physical memory.
Yeah, they're gonna take it to a more modern AWS instance, so that they'll get a performance increase on the CPU and more memory.
Cool.
So that'll help some of their performance issues. Because it was actually kind of low for some reason. They only had 16 gigabytes of RAM for a SQL server with Nigel, which is kind of absurdly low. But any event, so that the DBAs are going to take care of most of that. And so then the other ones, one of them that I'm going to take a look at tomorrow, they were complaining about performance on their self-service site. Probably the first thing I'm going to do is look at the maximum worker processes in IIS, and that's probably going to be a set to one is my guess, so I'll probably have to up each one of those up to two. That should help some things, too. So, we'll see. I don't know. But it's like the nitty-gritty crap, implementing new things, like we got a new payment provider that one of our clients is going to sign a contract with that'll basically let them pay their tuition in any currency that they want other than US dollars. So if they want to pay it in rupees or euros, they can't.
Bitcoin.
I don't think it'll take Bitcoin.
Has anybody been keeping an eye on Bitcoin? That stuff's going crazy right now. All the cryptocurrencies.
Not.
It made it up over 63,000 today. Last I checked, it was back under 62. And altcoins are like Litecoin right now, I think was at over 250? And I haven't seen it over 200 in a couple of years.
Well, Bitcoins are pointless to mine now.
Well, yeah. So Bitcoins have been pointless to mine for a long time.
Right. What, but it doesn't stop people from posting, whenever the Bitcoin price seems to spike in the Raspberry Pi groups on Facebook, they're like, can I set up a Raspberry Pi to mine Bitcoin? I'm like,
sure you can. It's just not going to do anything.
Yeah, you're just not going to make, you might make 0.1 coin maybe in an entire year. If you're in a pool,
I mean, if you're just doing it on your own, you have to get lucky and hit.
Right.
You're either going to get the best payday ever or absolutely nothing. And because of all of these farms that are out there with all this more processing power than you, you're extremely unlikely to be the lucky one.
Well, and for other reasons, it used to be Bitcoin was hitting graphics card markets pretty hard, as in people were buying. It is, but there's actually a bigger reason now. I think there is an issue with some of the resources they need to make the graphics cards now. So graphics cards are practically, it's kind of weird from what I've, the one place I've listened to it when them talking about it.
All hardware right now is having major issues in production.
It's cheaper to buy a PC with a decent graphics card in it than to buy the graphics card.
Yeah, because you're once again looking at paying two or three times MSRP, which is what you were paying at the height of the cryptocurrency everybody's a miner boom.
And because Dell buys huge numbers of it, they got a decent price months ago, so they have plenty of 2080s and so on and so forth, you know, so.
But yeah, good luck even finding one to buy.
Now, the one thing that is kind of, and I think it's getting even more popular, I mean, it's always kind of been popular, but I think it's getting more popular now that the pandemic has hit. And hopefully starts to lessen a little bit once it's over. But retro computing is kind of getting expensive too.
Right now buying a computer that turns on is expensive. Right.
Yeah. Cause, I was looking at, Apple IIcs and stuff, you know, PC, you know, computers that probably only people like our age even give a shit about, you know.
Yeah, the OE2, the 2C.
Yep. They're going between $400 and $500 if they're in decent shape.
Anything from the Commodore line.
If they're filthy, they might go for about $100. I haven't looked up that one yet. But now I am currently, let me see here. I have to look and see. I'm bidding on one on eBay. An Atari 520 ST. And my current price is...
I need a replacement Atari 800.
Those are relatively cheap still. You can probably get an 800 or 800 XL and find a decent price on those. Current winning bid is $76. They have no idea if it works. There's no power supply, so I'd have to buy a power supply. So I don't mind that too much because even if it included a power supply, I'd probably not want to use the power supply if it's the 30-year-old one that came with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet I have a couple of original power supplies for an Atari floating around here.
Yeah, but this is the 520 ST, so I wouldn't use the same one as the 2600 or even the 800. But eventually, and that's actually one thing, it's going to cost me about $20, but I'm going to replace, I do have the original power supply that came with the 800 XL that I have.
Well, I do have a working 800, just the casing's cracked. So even if there's online where there's, you know, it's non-functional,
doesn't work.
as long as
it's cosmetic.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so I'd have to probably source a power supply, a mouse, I'm not even gonna bother with a ST compatible floppy drive. I'm probably just gonna try and find an SD card reader for the AXI port on this, because that's the 520 uses the AXI port.
Actually, so the Atari 800 doesn't look like the right one.
I saw there was one on there. I saw a rare
400.
Well, I saw a rare 800 on there. It was the 800XE, which is one of the last 8 bits that was ever made that was never sold in the United States. It was sold in Europe, which is essentially an upgraded version of the 165XE.
Okay, mine is the Atari 400. I would have to.
The membrane keyboard?
Yeah.
Okay. Go for the 800 or 800XL if you can get one.
Those, honestly, those probably... if I can restore the Atari 400 I have with the cracked body, that's what I'm going to do.
Oh, sell it, and yeah.
No, I just want to restore it. I mean, it's the first machine I ever programmed on when I was like 8 years old, so.
Okay.
It's nostalgic for me. I'm going to keep it.
Yeah, okay, yeah, actually, here you go. Here I found it. The Atari ST GoTek Floppy USB emulator, which lets basically, one side has the, AXI connector to connect to the port on the computer, and, the other side has a LCD plus a USB slot in like a couple buttons, and you load the floppy images on the USB stick, plug it into that, and then you can boot them from this device for just like you would any other, floppy drive. It loads the same speed too, but, the bad thing with, trying to refurb old floppy drives is a lot of times those belts are gonna be shot.
Oh yeah.
And the discs themselves are gonna be shot too. So.
Like $140 for a working one.
Yep. And it may not work for that long.
Yeah.
But, for Atari 400 or the keyboard?
Atari 400. No,
the floppy
disk. It's not the keyboard that's the issue. It's an actual, like, the plastic casing got cracked. My former roommate stepped on it while he was drunk.
Damn. Not good. But, now, I don't know if Joe will remember, but I do know Dan will remember our good friend Aaron Newcomb. And yep. He has a great YouTube channel now called the Retro Hack Shack. And this week he was talking about things with he bought a Apple IIc. He said it's the first Apple computer he ever owned. And bought with his own money. But this week's show he was I forget what he was doing. Oh, he was working with an external floppy drive on his 2C. And he's also working with, apparently you get an adapter that'll work with the 2C that'll let you hook it up to HDMI, which is pretty cool. So he did that on there. But the week before, though, he melted the top of his 2C case.
Oh, look at that, yeah. Let's see it right there.
Yeah. It's like, oops. So, our good friend Link and I have been both kind of trying to find, a source where he can order the new top piece for his 2C. I just mentioned him, but I might as well mention Link actually. He was able to purchase a Apple IIe. Recently, and it's working. I guess he said the only problem with it is, he plugged it in, and it kind of came, of course, they had the original, 40-year-old power supply, because you gotta consider the 2E came in out in, 78 or 76, I can't remember when. He had it running off of that for a little bit, he heard something pop in the power supply and smelled the smell. It still was
He let the
running.
Magic smoke out?
out of one of the caps, I'm sure. But amazingly enough, it's still running. So he didn't run for too much longer after that, and he's going to work on purchasing a new power supply for it.
And he might be better off replacing the caps.
Yeah, the only problem, though, is because of all of this stuff going on with his diabetes, his hands move quite a bit, plus his eyesight's getting worse because of the diabetes. So he's, like, soldering is not going to work too well for him. And picking up little things, too.
Oh, they're not little. Pain, too. They're not little.
Yeah. Oh, no, the caps for that are not little, no. Those are fairly large caps on those.
And I'm pretty sure you could do it with an air gun if you had to.
Yeah. But, and I actually bid on it. I'm kind of glad I didn't win it. Cause I think one of the things I'm going to start doing is periodically, like on a weekend or something, I might go, to some of the Goodwills around and see what it might have a better chance of getting something in a reasonable cost, from a Goodwill versus buying on eBay.
Well, not necessarily anymore.
True.
Goodwill has moved a lot of their electronics, including vintage electronics, to selling on eBay.
Yeah, or the shopgoodwill.com website.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that I was bidding on a I'm trying to think what generation iMac. It was one of the colored ones, so it's one of the CRT ones.
Well, I bought some lots of PSP,
right.
And they came from Goodwill.
Okay, but this one I came close. I was within like minutes of winning it. Then I thought, oh wait a minute, I don't really want to deal with moving this thing. You know, maybe after we move, it might not be a bad idea to try and get something like that. But, you know, fortunately, somebody sniped it from me under near the end of it. But I was within minutes of when it was one of the gray ones, you know, where the back plastics were gray. It looked like it was in decent shape. It had a working hard drive and power supply.
Here's an Atari 400 on eBay up for bid. But it's $55 shipping and zero bids, 4 days left, and it's $50.
That's stupid shipping. It's not, I mean.
Yeah, it's part of the price.
When I got mine, because mine came with a whole bunch of shit. It came with the 1050 floppy. Actually, it might have had two 1050 floppies. It had a whole bunch of cartridges, and it had just boxes and boxes of floppies, okay? And that was a heavy package because of all that stuff was in it. $50 shipping is reasonable for that. $50 shipping just for the Atari 400 and power supply? I don't know about that.
Well, that one also for that also includes the program recorder, which I already have a program recorder in good condition.
Right.
But this one, you know, comes with one as well. And yes,
the tape recorder.
Yeah, that is high for shipping.
Oh, what I forgot. When I got my 800 XL, there was also one of the. Probably the neatest printer they had was that NLQ printer they had for the XL line, and it had the only thing is it was completely shot. This one was like the one printer they had. It wasn't Daisy Wheel, okay? If it was Daisy Wheel, I might have been able to find a ribbon for it and actually use it. But the problem was this one, instead of a Daisy Wheel, it was like a big fat Galator roller, okay? So it had like four or five different wheels on it. It worked in the same manner as the old calculators with the printers attached to them. Okay. So it would just, you know, move the head up and type one character at a time, you know. But the problem is that that wheel is made out of rubber, and that 30-year-old rubber was pretty much gone by that time. You know, I could just take my finger, run it across the print head, and the wheel just fell apart. So it's like, I pitched that. But that was shipped to me, too. And I'm like, so, and then the floppy drive worked for like, I don't know, 10 minutes, and it just stopped working altogether. It was spinning fine, and I opened it up and cleaned it up, but it didn't really work too well. So eventually, probably what I'm going to do is they have an SIO to SD.
The adapter kit. Yeah. I've seen that for a lot of machines. And yep. You know, being able to drop a micro SD card or an SD card in there instead of a 30-year-old floppy disk. Yeah.
Much more reliable. Not faster, but just a little more reliable. So, there's a couple different versions of that for the Atari, for the 8-bit ones. The one I'm looking at is the one from Lotharek. Basically has an Arduino board with an SD reader and an LCD and some buttons. And you basically use the buttons, and the LCD will tell you the name of the floppy image. You pick that floppy image, and then you just hit the same combination in you would use to boot off of that floppy drive. So, nifty little thing. I think you can even get them where you can modify the case slightly and stick it in there. I think another thing I also want to look at is I know you can do it for the 7800 game system, but I want to see if you can also do the same thing to add a composite video to the 800XL. So and then at that point, I can plug that into like a converter that'll convert it up to HDMI, scale it up to HDMI, and we'll see that, either that or HDMI. But now if I win this ST, one thing Lotharek has, which is pretty nifty, if I can't find an Atari mouse, I can get any mouse, any USB mouse, and they have an adapter. They'll adapt the USB mouse to the Atari mouse port, which is it's the same thing. It's the same connector they have for the Atari joystick. So, but then that way I can have a mouse. So,
cool.
But so that's only if I win it. Yeah, I don't know. It'll probably happen like most of these things. I set a limit. I will not go above a limit when I'm bidding on something on eBay. Like, I set my bid, maximum bid, to $80. If it goes over that, I am not gonna compete.
Well, yeah, you shouldn't. You should set your limit. But yeah. Then you should also remember people will a lot of times bid based on your limit. So true. That's why so many people wait until the last minute to throw in their max
yes.
bid.
Yeah.
So you wait till 10 seconds before it's time or 2 seconds before it's time. Then you hit that button with your max bid in it. And hopefully the last guy is under that. If they're right. over that, well, that's their problem, but you don't get the item.
And with the old 8 bits and 16 bits, actually a lot of times, even an old retro game shop might actually not be a bad place to look for those at, because sometimes
yeah.
they will have those.
It's great when you walk into a Goodwill or any of the consignment shops, and you mm-hmm. find some obscure piece of electronics that, you know, absolutely nobody knows about.
For dirt cheap.
For dirt cheap. For next to nothing, because nobody yeah. else knows what the hell it is, so.
Because the guy who gets the luckiest at that on YouTube is Clint from LGR. Man, he finds so much fun stuff.
Yeah.
Making me think more and more about getting the Commander X16 once it comes out. But like I think my plan though is for like the retro area is I'm thinking about getting like some of those Kellax shells from IKEA and kind of set them up kind of behind where like I'll sit like where I sit working. I'll have that shelf sitting behind me, kind of dividing the room into two. And then that way I'll have those, like, that'll be a cool background for Zoom when I don't feel like having a virtual background on.
Do you got a green screen or something?
I actually do. I do have one in storage. But don't really need a green screen to do with Zoom. Zoom is very good
it
without the green screen.
It works better with the green screen. I've seen it without, and sometimes it works, and then sometimes it, like, flickers a piece of your background into the foreground.
Yep. So, yep. I've seen that happen. Like, a lot of times that'll happen, like, if I'm drinking something, my coffee cup will do that, which I don't give a shit about that. Who cares?
But, with the green screen, you get a lot less of that.
Yeah. But... And I'm not going to set that up. Well, I mean, that's an option. That's an option. I can just use the green screen instead of that behind me. But I can put, what I could do is I can put that behind the shelf. And that will be my background for work. And then that way, at least on the other side, I can walk around. Then the background, it'll cover up my work area, kind of, sort of, you know. But we'll see. I don't know. I don't know. Depends. I like right now the only retro machines I have that I would have for that is my PowerBook G4, and I have too small to see on a Zoom session my Nokia N810s that will go in the retro section.
Cool.
So, and machines I'd like to get, an Apple IIc preferably, because I actually have the case and have had the case since 1985. The 1985 Boy Scout Jamboree, Apple computer was there, and they gave away to the Scouts the carrying case for the Apple IIc. And I have it still. So I would love to be able to have a 2C. And the optional LCD display for that. And I think there's actually multiple ones of that. There's one for, I think that Apple brought out. I think somebody else brought a different one out. But that's kind of like what I'd like to put on there. Some of the things that would fit in the case, I don't think you'll find in good condition anymore. Like, one of the things they had that would fit in the case is an actual battery that would run the thing for like 20 minutes. I say 20 minutes, not knowing. I'm sure it didn't run it for that long, but I'm sure the 2C wasn't that efficient power-wise. But now that's one floppy drive I would actually try and keep working, is if I want one of those, is the integrated 5 1/4 that I had on that one.
Yeah, well, I don't know why you would make a battery for that thing.
I don't either, but they did.
Unless it was the size of, like, I don't know, a VW.
Now, there's another one from Atari that I wouldn't mind having. It's actually a little bit reasonable and doesn't take up a lot of space, and that's the Atari Portfolio. Have you ever seen that?
I have not.
Actually, no, wait a minute. You have seen that. It was in a movie. Which movie, Dan, do you know? Do you remember? It was a popular one.
The Atari Portfolio?
Sneakers?
Yep. It was a handheld computer.
I don't even remember what the Atari Portfolio looks like.
I was just making a guess since you said a popular movie.
It is in Terminator 2. John Connor used it to hack into the ATM machine. That's the Atari Portfolio.
Oh, yeah, I would never have guessed that. Even looking at the Atari Portfolio, I'm like, goodness gracious, I have no idea.
That's why I'd want that. I don't know if it was actually DOS compatible, but it had a DOS-like system on it. So it's an interesting little handheld that ran off of, like, I think double A's. But yeah, of course, you know, you can't really hack an ATM with an Atari Portfolio. just not going to work. But that's what he used in the movie.
It has some DOS 2.x functionality.
Yes, yeah. It wasn't very good or even very popular, I'll say that. So, and then I have like Holy Grail retro boxes that I'd like to get, like either the next station or the next cube. I'd love to have one of those that ran OpenStep.
Ah, 1989 is when it came out.
The portfolio? Yeah. And another one I'd like to have is the B-Box. You remember the B-Box? It was a 95, I think. It ran BOS on a PowerPC chip, it was a PowerPC 603 or 604. Pretty neat looking machine. So, but, you know, if I don't get any of that, I'd be happy just making my Atari 800 XL fly and have it set up so I can actually use it.
How do you spell B-Box?
B-E-B-O-X.
Oh. Oh, yeah, I remember this.
Remember those? With the blinking lights on the front? Those things look cool. I've always wanted one of those. Ever since I saw it. But.
They were pretty expensive, weren't they?
Considering you probably couldn't get very much software on it, it was very expensive. You know, it's like, do you want to see, that's kind of where I'm looking at with some of the retro machines is if I can get some of the software relatively easily for them, then I don't mind it, but then I think, well, how much is it going to cost me to buy that retro machine? Like some of the retro machines, like if you look at, what's a good one that, would be actually the next cube is one that still would be fetching thousands of, it was originally $10,000 when it was released, but you can see those, if they pop up on eBay, you're looking between $2,000 and $3,000 for that machine.
That's $2,000 or $3,000 more than I'm willing to pay.
It's exactly it. It's like it's one of those machines that if I come across it at a Goodwill or something and they have an absurdly low price on it, I'm going to snatch it up. But if I'm looking on eBay, I'm probably never going to buy it. Because if I'm spending $2,000 or $3,000 on a computer, I'm going to actually spend $2,000 or $3,000 on a modern machine.
You know what? I'm curious. Like, I don't know what the Goodwills are like around where you are.
Right.
But I get the impression that the Goodwill in my area is savvy to technology because they have a whole section, like just whole room.
Yes, they are.
Separate. And if
which is why alternate consignment shops are usually better.
Yeah, because if something valuable came into that in there, I'm sure they would pick it up right away and realize what it was.
Well, even in the local shops, they'll have a case of stuff that you can fill out like a in-person auction. Like you just put a bid in on a piece of paper.
Yeah, you can't do pawn shops because they're always going to hike the price to the roof.
I mean, I'll look at Goodwill, and yeah, I might get lucky and find something sometimes, but probably better in our area is Ohio Thrift. They do have a tech section, but it's usually not very good. The best I've ever found, actually, the best thing I ever found was something I did find at a Goodwill, and that was, and I think they actually still make it, Microsoft made a mouse that's designed to go together with the Surface tablets. I want to call it the Arc Mouse, but I don't think that's the name of this one. But basically, When you weren't using it, like when you were packed away, it would fold flat. But then when you get to the place where you want to use it, you can basically fold it up so it would be more like a normal mouse. I want to call it the Arc Mouse, but I don't think that's the name of it. I almost picked it up, except for it was kind of weird feeling. It had that kind of, see, and that's some of the things that you find, like if you look at the Apple Newton 2001 or anything that came out in the 90s, laptops and stuff that had that soft feeling plastic, you know?
All the stuff that's all sticky now?
Yes, and it's all sticky now, and that's exactly what was wrong with this mouse. So it was made out of that rubbery kind of feeling plastic, and it was just nasty feeling. It's like, yeah, you can keep that. So that's one thing you'll see on especially older handhelds and like the Newtons and stuff like that, is that coating just starts to go to shit. But I've never seen that. Now, I did see I don't remember if it was in an auction site or if it was on a YouTube channel, but I did see somebody found one of the TI, for the TI-99 4A, the PEB box, the expansion box for that computer. That's a neat expansion box. They're rare, too, because not very many people bought them.
Yeah.
See, computer stuff's starting to become like antiques for us. You know, certain things I'd be willing to spend money on, but, you know, some of it's not gonna, you know. I'm not gonna spend $500 on an old Mac as much as I want one. Because honestly, it's just gonna be pretty. It's gonna be sitting there. Am I gonna use it?
Hell no.
Probably not. Probably not.
What are you gonna do on it? Oregon Trail, maybe, right?
Right. Well, you know, see, the 8 bits and the 16 bits are a little different, you know, like the STs and stuff. At least I can play games on those, and they'll actually play fine, you know? But, you know, but like the old computers, it's like, other than sitting there running a screensaver looking cool, what else am I going to do with it, you know?
Yeah, you know, because I look at that too. I'm like, oh, I could go back and revisit all the old games I used to play or something. And then I'm like, why am I going to play one of those? I could be playing, like, I don't know, Red Dead Redemption or something, you know, GTA. Yeah.
Well, the thing that I wish that on the modern consoles that it would do is like, for example, there is a new version of Space Invaders out now for, like, the Switch and for, I think it's also on the Xbox One. Or whatever the latest Xbox is, all right. But the game is so different, and there's no way to go back and play like the original Space Invaders. You know what I mean?
Right.
The one we fell in love with when we fed it our allowance in a week. You know. Friday night, you get that allowance, and you go to the mall. And you walked out empty-handed, usually.
Oh, absolutely. So, speaking of, though, did you hear of the Intellivision Amico?
I have, actually, and I'm actually kind of interested in that.
It's got pretty much the same shitty controller as the original Intellivision, and all the games look like shitty knockoffs of all the other crappy games. Like, it's like they updated the graphics and stuff on the games, but they're still, like, janky as hell. They're kind of like, I don't know. It's if you ever played in television, you know that their games were, like, just not as good as I never
felt
they
were. Not even as
Atari. Yeah, they were like, hey, here's this game. It's just, there's something wrong with it. Not like the anything was physically wrong with it. It was just like they put the least amount of effort they possibly could into it.
Well, the only games, the only thing that the Intellivision really had on Atari was, I think it was one of the first game systems that actually have digitized voice in it.
Yeah, okay.
Like I think like the baseball game had a voice in it, and others too, but I mean the little disc controller was shit. I mean, it was just horrible.
Like not to knock this effort, but the games look like something you would program out of one of those old like family computing magazines where you type in the source code and here's your game. And that was all cool and everything, but come on.
Oh, it's actually for sale now. I didn't know if it was actually for sale. Release date is in October. It's not, I don't even think it's Mattel branded either. That was Mattel's version. I need to do a show on that system too. George Plimpton did the advertising. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And I found my last episode of Living in the Shade of an 80s Arcade. I talked about the original Atari VCS, also known as the 2600, and in the show, I played a commercial, audio from a Atari commercial that had Pete Rose in it. Which I thought, ooh, that's interesting. Probably some of the first professional sports endorsements. But, yeah, cause the Atari 2600, the game pack-in, the original game pack-in was Combat, which is still one of my favorite games on that system because we always had it from day one. And then Pac-Man became the pack-in later. And the Pac-Man port was probably one of the worst ports they ever had. So a lot of people have theorized that the combination of the Pac-Man port and E.T. was the two causes for the video game crash in the mid-80s. You know, like 83, 84.
Right.
So then Nintendo saved the whole home console market to begin with when they brought out the NES, otherwise known as the Famicom in Japan. So... But yeah, I mean, it was an interesting time, and that's why I think the 80s makes a good, an 80s focused video game podcast, I think, works. But now a friend of mine, he says, well, you should do it in top 10 style. I'm like, well, it's not like they, back in the 80s, they actually tracked top 10 video games, like they did, like music, you know? I think they just started that, like, maybe in the 90s, I think. I don't know, but...
Tracking what, video games?
Yeah, like sales. What was the most popular video game of 1983? He's like, well, make it up. I'm like, okay, that's a possibility. That's probably what I might do. Or just walk through pick a year and walk through that year in video games. You know, like talk about all the different games. Some of it would be resharing, you know, because I've already talked about some of the individual games. But
we gotta start wrapping this up. It's after 10.
It'll be a short show.
Yeah,
but that's okay.
Well, you know, one of the things I wanted to add on here is I got a new sound card. And
you did.
It was just a $16 sound card. It still hasn't solved my problem. I don't know where the interference is coming from, but I had a little bit of a problem with it when I plugged it in and tried to start Darkness. It wasn't working. And I went down the rabbit hole of trying to figure out why, and my assumption was I wasn't referencing the device correctly because it's got ALSA on here, and the ALSA device naming is, you know, a wonderful joy. It's not that hard. It's like, you know, device, it's like HW, and then it's X comma Y, where X is the device and Y is the interface, or
wow,
I don't know. I don't lack a better word, but
the
it's
number
not,
of channels and yeah, the interface the or something like that.
So right. So like, but it's, but I guess you have to be aware of that. Channel or interface, whatever, that second thing is, I guess it's per, like there's one for input and one for output. So it's not like HW 1, 0 is, if you're using that as a reference, it's either for input or output, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Because it doesn't mean that your input's on 0 and your output's on, or your output's on 0 and your input's on 1. So HW 1, 0 is not necessarily your is not your output, and 1, 1 is input. 1, 0 is your first output, and 1, 0 is your first input, apparently, also. So it depends on what you're using it for. You only have, like, I was under the impression, I don't know where, that that second number was, like, the interface would be, input would be 0 and output would be 1 or reverse or whatever, but that's not the case. Anyway, I thought that was my problem, and I couldn't figure out, like, why I wasn't able to run this, and it was just because the Dark Ice configuration that I had for the old sound card, it said the channel, it only had one channel, which was mono, and this thing has two, which is stereo, and for some reason, it would not allow me to set a stereo channel to mono in the Dark Ice configuration. And it made it look like it was a problem trying to recognize the entire sound card. So, anyway, I got it working then after we got into the show, but I don't know. I listened to the out from the one sound card and it was fine. I replaced the sound card on the device that's connecting in the Dark Ice and it still has that same problem. I replaced the cables. It's sounding like whatever it is, interference is coming from within the actual Pi itself. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know where the interference is coming from. But I like the sound card, it's a nice little sound card. It has a, what is it, SPDIF? Are you familiar with those?
Vaguely.
Like, so, I was just curious, because I never used SPDIF, and it's got an input and an output for it, but it has this, like, this PEGINT in it, right? So, never having used this technology before, I'm like, how the hell do you connect whatever SPDIF is into that when there's, like, this peg that has no way to connect into it or whatever. I'm like, well, it's just a piece of plastic. How are you getting a signal in or a signal out by connecting that piece of plastic? Well, I guess it's just a plug that they put in the interface when it's not being used. I have no idea why. I don't know why it needs the plugs. I'm not even sure how to I didn't want to pull them out because I was afraid I'd break them. They're in there pretty tight, and I don't want to break the sound card or pull something out. But when I look at the pictures on the web of this thing, the interfaces, are you do have to take them out. I'm not sure if you turn them to take them out a certain way or what. I don't know. I was just curious about that. But I don't know. I'm not going to use it. So I'm not going to mess around with that yet. But anyway,
I don't quite understand why they have the gloves in there.
Anyway.
Yeah, sorry for the short show tonight. Hopefully we'll find out from Delwyn what's going on. Or we could just keep hijacking HPR.
Yeah.
Channels until they're all deleted. Yeah, or set our own stuff up.
I'm
pretty sure that the Mintcast guys won't mind.
If
we use that server.
I think we originally had a Mumble server, and then Delwyn offered, like, we had one, and then we were going to set it up somewhere, and then Delwyn was like, hey, you could use mine. And we're like, yeah, why bother setting one up, you know? Because we used to have a virtual server that we were paying for that we were running the Icecast stuff off of and other things.
Yeah, well, it doesn't take much to set something up at DigitalOcean, and I think it's $5 a month.
Yeah, you can get a $5 one. It's just,
why spend the money when they didn't have to?
Yeah. Well, you could set something up on one of your Pis, maybe.
Yeah.
But I think if you get more than like 5 people on one of the Pis, it starts getting a little jittery.
Probably. I mean, I got all this other server. I got a machine here that'll run it like a top, but.
Yeah, but then you also have to, you know, give out your IP address.
It's not like everybody doesn't have it. They just ping my server.
That's right.
My IP address. Just open a port on the firewall. Come right on in to the Mumble.
All right. I'm being summoned, so I do need to get going.
All right.
I'll talk to you guys next week.
Yeah, well, have a good one.
Let me know on the channel stuff.
Will do. All right, so I guess I got to play us out. Did you leave, Joel?
Nope, I'm here. I'm just listening.
All right. All right, so here we go. Thanks a lot. We'll see you in 7 days. Provided I'm still alive, I get my second shot on Friday.
Yay, mine's Tuesday.
All right. So here we go. Your promos.
Oh my God.
It's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
My name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making it for young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay.
We'll see how long it takes me to print this space. That'll probably be a weekend print.
Well, good luck on that.
Yoop.
Alright.
Alright, man. We'll see ya.
Alright, have a good one, man. I'll start. Start the recording. Yes, I will. Oh, man.
Be right back, switching to my PC.
Oh no, he's going down the dark, going to the dark side.
Here I am.
Is that better?
Much more comfortable. Of course, see, I had my headset hanging half on, half off the headset, you know, hey. Midcast log to be deleted. Contact Ken at Fallon, i.e. here.
Yeah, basically everything's to be deleted. They're not. Nobody's really doing shows on the server anymore.
Dan, maybe we should set up our own. Set it up on your XU4.
Yeah, why not, right? What the hell?
Yay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I hate also. I hate also so much. You know what I'm saying?
Also does suck a little bit, but not like Pulse Audio is a lot better.
I wish, like, all I want to do is figure out what this device is. Maybe I need to plug it into another machine that I can get a better... Like, I want to know what the device mappings are. I just... How could that...
Oh man.
What's that?
Last time I logged into this, into the Tilt server, 5150 was talking on it. On IRC?
Oh, in your logs.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Right?
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, that's what happened. Oh. That's weird. That is really weird. No, that can't be right.
Considering I don't know what it is because you haven't actually said anything yet.
So I'm trying to figure out. So I got this new sound card. We should just start the show.
Do it.
You there, Joel? Wait, did he come back?
Yeah, I am. I'm back.
All right.
I was just waiting for you to get your thing self together, and I was over at my other machine designing something, so.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Nothing to apologize for.
Yeah. All right. No, no, that's not. There we go. All right. So if I'm not mistaken, this is 902, right? Yes, 902. All right. Here we go. Let's fire this off. 5, 4, 3, 2.